it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can interact with us. As always, I'm sure you guys have plenty of thoughts as well after yesterday's loss to drop the Chiefs to 0-2. The Jays Southland Tow Service text line is 913-586-7965. We will get right into it. And then a little bit later on today, you'll hear from Andy Reid. The only place you can hear from Coach Reid on a Monday is right here on 96.5 The Fan. That'll be at noon today as I'll have some more thoughts on yesterday's loss and uncharted territory in the Mahomes era. 0-2 for the first time. It's been since 2014, even under Andy Reid, that they had a start like this. It's the first time we know Mahomes has lost three in a row, if you include the Super Bowl. So it's just uncharted territory. It doesn't feel right. We've been spoiled in Kansas City. And there's a lot of reasons why they're 0-2. Like, there's not just one answer to this.
It's a multitude.
You know, I think it's very clear, and we knew this going into this game, and it was obvious at times last year with the offense in particular. Their margin of error when you don't have Worthy and Rice is so, so slim. It is like pulling teeth to get a yard. They have to fight so hard just to get a yard. Time and time again, they struggled to get a yard last year. And it's the same thing to this point in time, now heading into week three of the season, where it really is such an effort that is required to get a first down with this offense. And they're down their top one and two weapons in the offense. And then you have had, I think, Cody, too many of your leaders, key cogs of this football team, make crucial mistakes.
Correct.
That have led to, if not costed you, plain and simple, a football game. You know, it was Chris Jones last week on a critical 3rd and 14.
Travis Kelce.
Last week, Travis Kelce, unfortunately, it's his words, not mine. He caused a potential injury, obviously, there for Xavier Worthy. And then we all know on this one, a pass he has to catch, and he catches 90% of the time his NFL career, that then gets, bopped up in the air and leads to an interception the other way that just killed all momentum and really, at that point, ended the game, as far as I'm concerned.
What's crazy, if he catches that ball, I definitively think they're winning that football game. Not just the win percentage, which we'll get into the Travis Kelce part of it just a little bit here in a bit, but yeah. I mean, the game, look, very simply put, it's like, why are they losing? All right. We're going to need a minute. Because the answer is, offensively, they're still lost. And this is not a knock on Patrick Mahomes, and I understand why they internally have to think this. This might be 14 straight months of me having to hear, oh, we're close. Oh, we're so close. One or two more plays. I'm like, get out of here. You had 10 points. You'd have gotten 17 if you got the touchdown with the Travis Kelce. You finished with 17 after you missed. You're not close. You haven't been close on offense for over a year. You haven't been close on offense since 2023. It's been a while. So, like, I don't want to hear that part of the excuse making anymore until it's, like, actually close to looking like a functional offense.
And that's not going to happen, though, until Rice and Worthy are back, though.
It's not. This game was all about, I would have come in here today, even as ugly as that game was, had they managed to win that game, which I think they do if Travis Kelce makes that catch. Had they managed to win that game, Gold, I'd have come in here and said what we were talking about on Friday. Just win. I don't care how it looks right now. I don't care how ugly it is. I feel the same way about the Giants. I don't care if it's 10-9 Sunday night. Just find a way to get a win and get on the board is what we're having a conversation about. As far as their issues go, I think the biggest problem is Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, their highest paid players are the ones performing the worst. It's kind of like how we talked about with the Royals when it was Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi. Before I get to the ancillary players, Chris Jones, Karloff, any of those guys, they got to come through first. And in the first two games, those guys have made more mistakes than normal. They're not bad players, But they've made more mistakes than
normal. Yeah, when you are up against it with some, you know, bad injury luck, and obviously one is an issue with a suspension that you knew all offseason was going to eventually have to be paid off, if you will. And now they're paying for it with the Rashee Rice suspension. They're only two games into the six-game suspension. You had a brutal start to the scheduling-wise, you know, with the Eagles and the Chargers, and you maybe get a break with the Giants, hopefully, before it gets really tough again with the Ravens and a Lions team right around the corner, and the Lions sure step back up and offensively look great again after a bad week one performance against what turns out probably a pretty good Packers team.
I mean, more about the Packers defense than the other two teams.
But you just specifically to the offense, and we're going to get into the defense here in about 25 minutes, who obviously looked a lot better in the way they performed. But this offense, it is truly just such a grind to get any yards. And it's like, it is just so frustrating to watch. And so when you finally have that drive going, man, you cannot have, you know, last week it was the crucial holding penalty or a false start penalty. This week it was the Kelce interception. I basically, it's not a Mahomes interception as far as I'm concerned. It's a Kelce interception that you have. You just cannot overcome that. When they were down with 7 or 8 minutes to go, you know, a couple of years ago, you would have said, oh, plenty of time, Mahomes magic, all that. Now you're at a point where you know the game is over with the way this offense is currently constructed. Now, it's not the finished product. I know you said you're tired of hearing they're close, and I'm with you. I get it.
They've been saying that for a long time.
I understand that, but they're down their number one and number two options. So acting like it's the same thing right now, I would disagree with that. Let's see what it looks like at that point in time. But you still aren't going to have either of those guys for a couple more weeks. Maybe you get Worthy back on Sunday against the Giants, but you're not having both of them until middle or late October due to the suspension. So this is what it is, and you were hoping to see a better offensive adjustment, and it didn't exist. The running game was non-existent again, and their seemingly more successful runner right now is Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, and I didn't even like the way he ran in the first game. And some of that could come back to the offensive line. I don't think there's just like some large gaps in space that is making it super easy to navigate outside of that. But yeah, I mean, offensively, it's like, you know what? A lot of it is last year they were clearly good enough or in a position enough that they could flounder a little bit in some of these games against playoff teams and it not affect them. This year they can't. They can't mess around with these playoff teams and make more mistakes than the other. Because the truth is, they win that football game if they don't throw the interception. Because, and again, I don't think that one's on Travis or on Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I know he took some heat for it after the game. He said, oh, if I put it more in his body, whatever. Like, it hit his hands. He has to be caught. No, I don't care if his head was coming around. Like, I don't care. That ball has to be caught. That one's on Travis. But a lot of it is just they can't afford those minor mistakes and to recover. And so they're stuck in the spot. And look, it's like I would put these on two different meters. If I asked you, Gold, panic meter and concern meter, to me, those are different. Panic is like, I'm worried they're not making the playoffs. This team's falling off a cliff. That meter is still relatively low for me. It's like a 3. Concern meter for some of the issues they're showing is in the pass rush is still having issues. They're not running the ball well. They do not have the horses right now on offense in order to have a functional offense regularly. And one of the biggest things I have in the concern meter is Andy stopped creating or is done trying to create until he has his weapons. This offense looks identical to last year's offense, which I also didn't enjoy. It doesn't look like a bad version of a different offense. It looks identical to the way you tried to win on offense last year. And at this point in Andy Reid's career, that's the antithesis of what he has been as a head coach. So that part is like weird to me. Why haven't you?
Yeah, they haven't been able to scheme anything up. Now I'll say it for the third time already. We're only 9 minutes in the show. They're down Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice. This is what the offense is when you don't have two of your top playmakers and your tight end, who is supposed to be maybe your third best playmaker, is hurting you more than helping you. I understand he had a touchdown last week. That was a play that actually they did scheme up pretty nicely to get Travis Kelce wide open a week ago. But yeah, this is where they're at as an offense. And it's weird you were asking, you know, the panic and concern meter, because last week I said I was more concerned about the defense coming out of the game than the offense. You can call me crazy after an 0-2 start. I feel better today about the football team long term than I did a week ago because I saw improvement from the defense.
Oh, you saw a unit improve? Yeah.
Last week I told you defensively that was my number one concern because the offense we know is going to be, frankly, bad. until Rice and Worthy come back to see if they can improve. The offense is not going to really get much better until they have both those guys available. That's just the reality as far as I'm concerned. But could the defense improve enough to help out the offense? The defense did their job yesterday. Defense did their job. Mm-hmm. They gave them a chance to win the football game. Jalen Hurts had 101 yards passing. Saquon had 88 yards or so, but he didn't break off a big 30-yard gut-wrenching run or anything like that. Devonta Smith had a great catch against McDuffie, but it still took him going back on an underthrown football and making a one-handed grab, essentially.
And by the way, you got the matchup you wanted in that. So Bags, sit the house, and you got a one-on-one with your best corner. You'll take that every time.
So, yeah, they have to start winning football games, and they have to have zero margin. They have to have zero errors on offense because there is no margin of error there. But defensively, I actually think they made some improvement. We'll talk about still the unfortunate reality, which is unless Spags is on it, dialing up blitzes, they can't get pressure. In this game, they were able to do it with blitzes, and so Jalen Hurts was getting the ball out so quick, the quickest in his NFL career, as a matter of fact. So you weren't asking your secondary guys to be out on an island all that long.
There was a couple times you stayed back there, the coverage was great.
And that plan worked. So I feel better about the defense. I feel worse about the running back group than I ever have. Offensively, though, I don't feel any worse because this is what the offense is going to be until Rice and Worthy are back.
Look, there's a chance, and we can talk more about Worthy as the week goes on. There's a pretty decent chance, I think, that Xavier Worthy will be back on the field this week. And if it looks like he's practicing a bunch, we'll talk about his potential impact. I'm to understand that Worthy was expecting a pretty good chance to play on Sunday. Unfortunately, because the Chiefs wanted to take it a week with the injury, he didn't. Which means I think there's a really good chance he's playing for the Chiefs on Sunday, a player that they desperately need.
Yeah.
Look, you can take the small things out of it. Maybe once they have some other guys to throw to, the Tyquan Thornton deep ball is a thing that sticks around from this version of the offense. What has been surprising to me in this 0-2 start, before we talk about the story that eventually became a big story in the Tush Push, the thing that has surprised me the most, though, Gold, is the lack of composure for one of the greatest dynasties in NFL history. Jones is losing it on the sideline or yelling at Hurts at the end of the game, and we can get to that later. Kelce, after they score a touchdown, is saying, I'm sick of this S. It seems like a team lacking a certain amount of composure out of their stars or accountability. I think it's kind of lame when you're not available to talk after the game for stuff like this, but it seems like they're showing some cracks emotionally, which is weird because this team has been through the gauntlet a bunch. And maybe just one win cures that ill. And if they beat the Giants on Sunday, emotions will stabilize and they'll have a little bounce. They do seem a little out of control emotionally, which is surprising to me because, again, this is a team that has seen everything, seen it all, been through it all. So they shouldn't be showing signs of like that, I guess, considering where they are.
Kelce in particular, I know we saw it in the Super Bowl 2 years ago when they won that Super Bowl. Obviously, that was the whole shoving Andy thing or whatever. Yeah. And that obviously they won, so it never became anything because they won the football game. You know how this stuff goes, Cody. If you win the games and stuff like that happens, nobody cares. Not a
probably
big deal.
Don't even talk about that, Travis Kelce.
But when you lose games, that stuff stands out far more and you start to question it a little bit. I don't think even with the sideline reaction that Kelce had and Chris Jones towards the end of the game, I don't think there are players in there, at least the ones that we're talking about here, vets. I don't think they're panicking. I don't know if that's what you were alluding to. I don't think they're panicking, but the frustration, it's very evident. They're wearing the frustration quite a bit,
outward.
Right?
Showing it.
Yeah, that has definitely happened. I don't think it's panic as much as it is clearly frustration has set in there. And look, you're an 0-2 football team. As we say, it's uncharted territory. A lot of those guys, everybody.
Maybe was Christians around at 14? I don't think so.
Is he the only
one? Playing 11 years ago. Travis Kelce might be the only one who was around.
That's it.
For an 0-2 start.
Andy Reid, Kelce, and that End is
of, James
it.
Winchester.
Is he even part of that? I'm going alluding to who else has been part of an 0-2 start. Even.
The only other possible answer.
It's kind of crazy.
Hold on, I want to look up now if James Winchester.
I'll let you look that up.
Let James Winchester talk to the team this year about how they overcame that 0-2 start.
I'll let you
made
look that
the playoffs. Yes, he was on.
Okay.
Missed it by a year. Sorry. 2015. Okay. Missed it by a year. So just Travis Kelce and Andy Reid.
An hour from now, we don't usually take calls, but we will open up the phones. If you've got something to get off your chest about an hour from now, we will take calls. 913-586-7965. Get the pulse of the fans a little bit and how you guys are feeling after yesterday's game. Also, if you were out at Arrowhead, what you made just of the atmosphere there. We are going to talk about the PA announcer switch and what some of you, we had some people send me videos of the third down calls and stuff. We will get
Dale
to that,
Carter,
I promise.
Might have been onto something.
A little bit later on. Yeah, so people weren't a huge fan
not
of the
Dale Carter.
Different. Not the corner, the PA announcer, or former PA announcer. But there's no secret, the other huge talking point, and probably more so even nationally all week long, is going to be about the tush push. And let me preface this before we get into it. This is not sour grape stuff. Okay, the Chiefs did not lose because the tush push exists. Okay,
two things can be true at the same time. We are not blaming the rest for the loss. The Chiefs did that all on their own.
Their offense is not good enough. We already talked about the Kelce issue and all of that. But the tush push almost got banned this past offseason. And now after yesterday's game and seeing the national discourse, this thing is done after this year. It's not happening again. The fact that it is becoming so obvious finally to people that the guards on the tush push are clearly moving forward before the ball is snapped, and the refs either can't see it because of the alignment or refuse to call penalties, this thing's going to get banned. It's, some of you were not anti-tush push. You said, hey, it's a play that the Eagles run really well. Why are we banning a play? That was the argument so many people have. And I understand that argument. There's some that say, hey, it's just a boring play. Get rid of it. That's kind of where I'm at. And I understand why that's a slippery
slope. Yeah, you didn't
mind
it from a competitive end. You just liked it because it's boring.
But if you're going to allow the play, you still have to call fouls that occur on the play, as in you know, false starts. And that's the problem with this whole thing, Cody, is it seemed pretty obvious yesterday at least three times, the left guard, sometimes both the right guard and the left guard, were moving forward, I don't know, a half second, whatever. I don't know the exact, you know, slow-mo makes it seem like it was way early. It's probably not as early as it seemed, but they're moving early on these tush pushes.
Or lined up offsides, and both teams seem like they're fully in the neutral zone, which creates this whole issue. Look, after the first one, Gold, not the other two that you're discussing, you and I keep a live accounting of the game so that we can have things to talk about in the show. After the first one, I typed in, the thing I don't like about it is that it's just not officiated the same as any other play. That's why you have to get rid of it. It is officiated different than any other play in the NFL. They essentially have decided it is penalty-less. People are incapable of false starting, incapable of lining up offsides, incapable. And then on the final play of the game, because it's so crowded, you can't even see if something happened. So we can't even tell if Drew Tranquil actually got the football or not, which he very well might have. I don't know. Because I can't see it.
Yeah, you can't spot the ball. You can't tell if there's fumbles. You can't see if there's penalties. How can you have that play around?
That's the issue. The issue is less about the competitive advantage that the Eagles get in getting it. And I'll be honest, the Chiefs are better than any team in the NFL at guarding it. They ran that play 7 times, which was almost 12% of their offense yesterday. And the Chiefs stopped it 3. The Chiefs are actually better than almost any team in the NFL at stopping that play. If you can't officiate it, and you heard it from Dean Blandino at the end of the game, if you can't officiate it, then you have to get rid of it.
Yeah, this was Blandino on the Fox broadcast yesterday. The fact that you now finally have, and I know Dean Blandino doesn't work for the NFL anymore, but he used to be the head of officiating for the NFL. We've had him on this show. He's been on the station numerous times. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up on this station at some point this week again, or Mike Pereira.
He might be on
right?
Carrington's show today.
Honestly, I don't know. That's their show. It wouldn't surprise me. But anyway, the fact that he's saying it that strongly, and you see what the national narrative is finally catching up. And it was very close to getting banned anyway last year. This thing is done. This will be the last year. I'm confident saying that today.
Yes.
On September 15th, 2025, the tush push will be done by the end of this season. It'll be gone. They will ban it in the offseason. It'll be over. And this game will be the game why.
No impassioned speech from Jason Kelce or Jeffrey Lurie is saving it this time. It really is. It is getting, and I don't know if anyone's been paying attention, because you know how it is. When I was a younger sports fan, I was like 15 or 16, I would never turn on any national, like no sports center that day. If your team, you know, had a tough loss.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So like maybe you've been avoiding it. Maybe you handle it that way now. I'm just telling you right now, it is getting the full Juwan Taylor treatment. Remember when we blamed Chris Collinsworth for pointing out something Juwan Taylor was doing and essentially ruining any chance he has and not having a false start? Adam Schefter today on ESPN said, the Chiefs lost not today, but in March when they didn't ban the tush push. That was a sentence from Adam Schefter today.
Yeah, it's over.
And they were deleted. They were copyright people video of the guy false starting so that there's not evidence of it out there. It died today. And again, I'm not saying that the biggest reason the Chiefs lost is why. But like, you have to admit,
it's
like,
part of the equation, though.
They were on the 1.5 yard line, committed a false start on a third down, and then got a touchdown. If it's third and goal from the 5, they very well might still score a touchdown. Pretty good chance the Eagles are a good football team. But also, it's not a guarantee like it is in the tush push in the situation before. And so, like, again, I don't think that's the biggest reason they lost, or even really a reason at all. But it is, if you can't referee it, if the head of officiating is saying there's nothing they can do about it, then get rid of it.
Yeah, look, if you're an Eagles fan, you said, sour grapes and all this. You guys should enjoy it the rest of the season, and you should puff your chest out, and it's a huge advantage, and it's helped you win the Super Bowls, and it might help you get back to one again this year. I'm just saying, this will be the last year the Eagles will have that play to their advantage. Now, Chris Jones, he did speak after the game at the podium, actually, about the tush push and the calls or lack thereof.
Sometimes can't get them all the calls right. And just because we see it, sometimes the official is 15, 20 feet away. Sometimes he can miss those small things. And we think he jumped multiple times. So an official didn't see it, so it wasn't called. And, you know, we just got to go play the next down.
Much calmer way of time. Obviously, Chris Jones was not happy about it. He, you know, he was at the podium, not wanting to get fined or anything like that. But, yeah, the team clearly felt that there was multiple false starts. They also, in a later clip too, Chris Jones, they truly felt like they got a fumble too. Now that I have no idea. No, none of us could see it. Those guys under a pile and everything, that they honestly felt like they forced a fumble. That one's a little bit tougher for us to even discuss because again, you can't see anything.
He had the ball at the end, but they might have had the ball at the same time when Jalen Hurts was on the ground. I can't tell, but that goes back to the officiating of the play. Is that it creates a chaos environment that does not allow for proper refereeing of the game. Now, look, I'll say at the same time, the Chiefs failed that 4th-and-1 earlier in the game, and then they got the one later in the game. Andy, it's just run a quarterback sneak. I'm tired.
I know it.
I'm sorry. It's a stupid excuse that he got hurt the one time a billion years ago. It is a play everyone in the NFL runs all the time and nobody gets hurt. It's enough. You have stunk for 3 years in a row on short yardage situations in which you could have just shoved Patrick Mahomes through, not even a tush push, just a regular ass QB sneak like Josh Allen runs. It's enough already. You had your time in the sun where you put it off of the playbook because you were worried about your guy. He's healthy. He's fine. Just run a QB sneak. It's fine. Trust me, it will be okay. It's playing scared because of one injury, one time.
It looks sillier now because we've now seen 2 games in a row where Mahomes has lowered his shoulder and risked an injury by doing that on a run. He led the team in rushing again in 2 straight. I believe he just had a career high in rushing yards yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, for a regular season game. So the fact that he's risking himself there, and on one of them, it looked like it might even have been a designed run. I don't know if we got confirmation on that, but yet the QB sneak because of a very fluke injury. I think we've had this discussion for years now, though, Cody. It's very clear. As long as Andy Reid is the head coach, they're not running that QB sneak. It's just not happening. So that's what my anger and frustration with it is so low now compared to what it is, because we've just, it's very clear. It's been 4 years. It's been 5 years since that play happened, hasn't it?
Yes.
So they're not going to do it. But I'm with you. If he's going to run and lower his shoulder anyway, that's an injury risk play as well. If you're going to struggle on short yardage at this point in time, as much as the Kansas City Chiefs have over the last couple of years, you've got to find a play that works. They're not even trying to do the old belldozer anymore. He's on the team. No. You get my point. They're not even trying to do that anymore in short yardage.
It's so silly. There was a while after they got rid of the tush, after they got rid of the QB sneak, that they were running speed option plays with Patrick Mahomes. Like, are you crazy?
I told you.
There's just no way that this is more at risk than the easiest play on the planet.
I told you two years ago, who was it? Chad Henne would have been the backup then. Last year was Carson Wentz. Yeah. This year it's Gardner Minshew. I'm serious.
Fine, just run it with Gardner.
Right. Sure. And don't give me this like, oh, well, they'll know you're doing it.
Who cares?
It doesn't matter. It would still work. Have Gardner Minshew come in on a 4th-and-1. And I know normally, like, don't take the best quarterback in the league out of a play on the if you're doing a QB sneak, make the team prove they can stop you. If it's truly an injury risk thing, can Gardner Minshew not get some reps with Creed Humphrey under center during the week? Just a few for a QB sneak. He's a veteran. How many times did Gardner Minshew do QB sneaks with Jacksonville? I bet you, or the Raiders last year. My guess is he's done it a few times. That's the move. Even if you're like, hey, we don't want to risk the Mahomes injury, bring in your backup quarterback for one play, two plays a game on a fourth and one, because you have not shown that Carson Steele or Pacheco or Hunt are capable on a consistent enough basis, or your offensive line for that matter, to get a freaking yard on fourth and one.
The truth is that the way that this works anyway, and the whole setup for the rest of this anyway, is, oh no, you're taking it out of his hands. You do that when you just hand it to the running back on fourth and one anyway. You've already taken it out of the hands of Mahomes, so you're already screwed.
Monday's football coverage is presented by Busey Bank, where they're focused on your success. At Busey Bank, they've been building businesses and growing wealth since 1868. Learn more at buseybank.com. Up next, we will talk about the defense, which was a lot better, but there's still one glaring issue with them. And a big shift for the rest of the NFL season happened yesterday outside of Kansas City.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, no, we don't listen to all that stuff. You know what I mean? We go back Tuesday, get back to work, and get ready for the next game.
McDuffie in the locker room yesterday talking about whether or not there's any panic with this football team. 0-2 start to the season. We're going to talk about the defense a little bit here before we get into some massive NFL news outside of Kansas City, but it definitely impacts the postseason, and it definitely impacts
everyone.
Seeding, NFL, and fantasy football, and betting, and everything. I mean, it truly is sends major shockwaves, and definitely our producer, Drew Nixon. We will get to Cincinnati and Joe Burrow in just a bit with the big news this morning with his injury. But let's talk about the defense, which was way better than what it was against the Chargers. We came in last Monday talking about, you know, Ladd McConkey, 30% win rate, wide open, zero pressure on Herbert. It was so easy. They didn't even have to run the ball. A couple things with this performance. I think clearly there was much better communication. There was all the miscommunication a week ago. You felt like guys were at least in the right spot, which for starters was not happening in week one. And I actually felt like guys, when they were on an island in coverage, did really, really well. Noel Williams had a big play at one point in time when they left him on an island.
Probably got away with one PI, but we'll let that go.
Yeah, but we can play that game with every corner of football. Yeah. And they didn't call it, so therefore he held his own, right?
That one was pretty bad.
He held his own. The rookie did, which was nice to see. So I thought the defense improved quite a bit, which gave me some hope, as I said, you know, looking forward, because the offense to me is not going to get any better for a couple weeks. So the defense getting better as quickly as they did was promising. Now, the one issue you still have, and will other teams exploit it better than Philly could, which is they still cannot get pressure when they don't blitz. It still has to be manufactured. Now, in this game, it worked. They got home quickly.
When they blitzed, it worked. Except for the one Devonta Smith catch. Correct. Although I'd say you got the coverage you wanted.
Yeah, McDuffie was right on him. Ball was underthrown. Devonta Smith made a great catch.
Top play to defend.
The Chiefs blitzed Jalen Hurts on 16 of his 25 throws, according to Next Gen Stats. So 64% of the time. That was their highest blitz rate under Spags since 2019. This is a DC that blitzes more than just about anybody, and that was still the highest blitz rate.
It was a good plan.
Hurts, though, got the ball out quicker than any other time in his career. 2.11 seconds, ball was out.
So who cares? Because they were all at the line of scrimmage. Did you see his throw chart?
Yeah, well, he didn't have time to do it, and he only threw for 101 yards, and that's also why the coverage was better. You weren't asking guys to stick with their man for 5 seconds or whatever, right? And so it all went together. It was a really good scheme, I thought, from Spags. He deserves credit for that. I think he was actually the MVP of the game. If it's even possible to hand out an MVP for a loss, it would be Steve Spagnuolo. But the problem is, Cody, and we'll see it, they're going to play the Giants this week. It'll be Russ.
He just had 400 yards.
Not as mobile as he used to be. And then they're going to play Lamar Jackson the next week. So their inability to get pressure with the front four is still very, very concerning. But I did think they took a nice step forward if you're looking for any positive at all after a game like that yesterday.
I think you can always take positives out of a game if they exist. That was a night and day difference performance-wise defensively. Because in the previous game, when you were talking about, like, they came in slow, they came in hot. They were flying around on defense immediately. Looked like they had juice, had energy. They held them only 216 yards. That in its own right, that's a win. That game is fully on the offense. I don't care that Trent McDuffie got beat on one round. This entire game is on the offense because the defense put up an incredible performance, in my opinion. A couple of those points were gift-wrapped. The interception from Patrick Mahomes that Travis Kelce dropped down into field goal range, and the free field goal the offense gave him, where the defense only gave up 2 yards after just giving it to them on a situation where they didn't get the fourth and one. So, like, 6 points were completely gift-wrapped in that game. They gave up one play that I wish that Trent McDuffie probably wishes he could knock down, and that's a really, really difficult play to defend, and I would say that the call was good. You just didn't end up getting it. The biggest issue, and the only issue I would say I had in this game defensively and for the first two games is, well, it looks like we're back to not taking the ball away, huh? Like, I'll even forgive the pass rush stuff for a minute because they were choosing to blitz. I guess I won't know if they got pressure with the front four. They blitzed 70% of the time in the game. They need a ball hawk. They need someone who wants the football. Because, Gold, the difference in this game was the one turnover from the Chiefs and zero from the Eagles. Had the Eagles turned the ball over at any point in that game, probably a win for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it would have had to have come in the run game, though, because based off of the...
they were throwing.
They were, I mean, how many times was the ball really thrown down the field?
94. Because the sacks, they had 94 total passing yards. So that's a great defensive performance.
So I don't know. I mean, there was maybe one opportunity to possibly get an interception in the game. You know, maybe one where McDuffie, you know, knocked down the ball, and then I can't remember who it was, tried to make a diving play, and it would have been a
Jaden
hell of a
Hicks
play.
Almost it got it.
That would have been an insane play. But so I don't think there was really many opportunities in the passing game. I know you're like, well, create your opportunities. But because of what we said, getting the ball out in 2.1 seconds.
No, 216 yards. They didn't have that many chances to take the ball.
It would have had to have been, you know, a strip. And remember, on the first drive of the game, I think it was, Jalen Hurts, like, fumbled it himself. Now, he got it back. That would have been, you know, hindsight and everything, that would have been a massive, massive play. They would have had the ball inside the red zone right away. Jalen Hurts recovered his own fumble, and then they marched down the field.
It's just a matter of, it's like the one thing that's probably going to keep me afloat this week from the, like, okay, don't let the concern get too high, out of control, is this was a better performance than week one. They still lost.
Yes.
But I think the Eagles overall are a better team, and this was a better performance. This was certainly a better performance on defense. It was an equally bad performance on offense, would be my argument, but the same problem exists. Thrown to Jason Brownlee and Tyquan Thornton and Hollywood Brown, who for a minute I thought that they were going to lose in that game, and I'm like, are you?
Yeah, he limped off for one play.
He limped off pretty strong. Yeah. It was a pretty strong limp goal. I'm like, are you? Hollywood, we just need you to stay healthy for 4 weeks. If you get hurt in week 7, I won't hold it against you. It's cool. I hope you don't. Hope you stay healthy the whole year. Can you make it 4 more weeks after this one is what I'm requesting at this point so they can get back Worthy and Rice together and you can go through it. But the defensive performance, I don't know how you could look at that.
I feel better about the defense, but it's still obvious what is probably going to be an issue the whole season, which is getting pressure with the front four. Spags is going to have to really dial it up like he did.
The problem with it this year, too, is last year you're asking the defense to be perfect again because the offense – can't do anything. Yep. You're asking the one play. Trent McDuffie had a really good game. The one play that he couldn't make a play on ended up being the one that got them inside the 5, and they ended up scoring a touchdown on to go up by double digits. So what, like one misstep by the defense, and the game almost feels like it's over. Like it feels like the way that they're asking the defense to play. And last year they answered the bell all the time, pretty much, except for really in the Super Bowl. The defense always answered the calling. Where now we've seen. In game one, the defense obviously didn't look that great, but this one, you're asking them to do almost more than what any team is really capable of because the offense just can't get anything going. It's really, really difficult to win football games when you're constantly having to play borderline perfect football.
Yeah, they're a team, as we said, to start the show offensively, but I think you're right. I mean, it's defense as well. They don't have much margin for error right now, and that's going to be the case at minimum until Rice and Worthy are both on the field at the same time, and hopefully your offense is able to go out there and have some big plays and obviously put up points and have some sustained drives, and it just looks, frankly, right? Like, we all watch. Like, you don't have to watch football that long in your life to know when you watch they're all like, oh, this is just rough to watch. This is a struggle every single play.
Even the scoring drives are 12 plays for 67 yards. You know, like, ugh.
Every 5 yards, you're like, oh, my, that was a lot of work to get 5 yards or get 3 yards. I mean, it's just brutal. And yeah, the defense last year was really, really good. It's why they won 15 games. This year, the reason why they're still in both of these games, even though they've lost, is because of the defense. And when you're playing the opponents they're playing, it's not going to be good enough. You know, hopefully The Giants are a team that you can step, you know, they can't think this way. I can, just as an outsider.
Oh, no. You can't overlook anyone.
I can step back and say, hopefully this is a game in which the Giants are not near the competition, and so it's good enough to at least get a win on Sunday. That can't be their thought process, but I can think that
little
way.
A little afraid of Malik Neighbors, who is still very, 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 very good. Yeah. Easily the worst, like the, of all the moments on offense that make you just like clench your fist in anger, the fact that they completed three passes and didn't have a first down is like, oh my God, this.
Yeah, you completed the first
three,
quarter.
You completed three on the one that they failed the fourth down.
Yeah.
You completed three passes and you were still short of the sticks. Goodness. What am I watching? The Browns? Yeah. Look at Patrick Mahomes. This is crazy.
At the end of the first quarter, too, I think it was 1 for 4 for 3 yards passing. I think that was the end of the first quarter stat. And then Mahomes obviously started running a little bit and you know, the game was tied at halftime. They were still at. That's what's so weird about the Eagles game. If I would have told you before the season that, hey, they're playing the Eagles, it's going to be like, that's a potential loss. That's a really tough game, and they're going to be, you know, 10-10 at half. You're like, okay, yeah, they could swing that game in a hurry. It's all because of, one, how they've looked, but also the loss of the Chargers. If they would have beat the Chargers and they would have lost this game in this fashion, yeah, we'd be saying the same issues exist, but you'd be sitting at 1-1 and there wouldn't be the panic. I'm sure you've been texted already. I already got three texts today. You've got some radio hits, I'm sure, later this week as well. People, oh, you want to come on, and we want to have you come on to talk about the 0-2 Chiefs. Like, everybody wants to talk about what the hell's going on in Kansas City for other reasons. Already happening.
Meanwhile, the biggest story in the NFL probably from yesterday was, once again, a team losing, or eventually what always happens, a team losing a star quarterback or a star player that has a massive impact in the league. I want to start by saying, I prefer when these players are healthy, and I think it makes the NFL more fun when guys like Joe Burrow are available to play. But Adam Schefter and pretty much everyone else, Ian Rappaport, all reporting the most likely scenario, although he's getting a second opinion, is that Joe Burrow is going to need turf toe surgery that is going to keep him out for a minimum of 3 months, which means he is likely done for the entire season. There'd be a small chance that if they were in the AFC title game, Joe Burrow would come back. So for the first time, Cincinnati actually found a way to start fast. They're 2-0. They actually found a way to win some games early, and now no more Joe Burrow, likely for the rest of the season. Look, this has a massive impact in the league.
Oh, all the way from, you know, just their AFC North competition, what you think the Ravens or the Steelers potentially are going to do, or the Bengals, to obviously seeding in the AFC. Plus, you just there's a trickle-down effect of what NFC games that they have coming up down the road as well. It's a massive, massive blow anytime any team loses a quarterback, let alone a top-five quarterback. Now, Browning has plenty of experience. We saw him a couple years ago when Burrow also missed time.
Pretty rocky yesterday, but they got the win.
Go out there and play well. Now, he did throw three interceptions, but he was, you know, how many reps did he get during game week for that one? None, right? Basically. So they'll have a full week to get him up to speed. They still have unbelievable weapons on offense, but we just got done talking about margin of error. Well, now your defense, which in Cincinnati has been better than it was last year for 2 weeks, you need them to keep that up, because you cannot count on Joe Burrow to bail you out. He's not going to be around.
No.
And so it's a huge, huge loss for them. You know, we do have a show bet. Fortunately for Drew, there is two wins in the can.
He's 2-0.
He's got two wins in the bank already,
right?
Because otherwise, if it was 1-1 or 0-2, I think you would be very nervous about our Hooters bet. And that's something that now is very much in play.
Look, the reality is, without, like, we all agree that Joe Burrow is a top four quarterback in the NFL. Let's not get into the order. It's not important for this purpose, because we know he's 2, 3, or 4 in most of our eyes. The biggest problem is very simple. Joe Burrow has all the talent in the world. He has an incredibly talented offense. He is injury prone in the worst way, worse than Christian McCaffrey, worse than people we talk about being injury prone. He's injury prone because he has now missed pretty much three full seasons with three different injuries: the wrist, the toe, and the Achilles, right, for him the previous time? Or was it the ACL? Which one was it?
Wrist, ligament in 2023. He had the ACL, PCL, ACL. MCL 2020.
He's only ripped apart in 2020.
Knee, wrist, and toe. He's a magnet for it. He is a magnet.
They're
for
all
season.
Ligament injuries too. It's not broken anything. It's ligament.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just like he's medically predisposed to having that issue, or because of like anyone else. If you get hurt before, you rely on other parts of your body, and you don't realize you're relying on other parts of your body, and it makes you more susceptible to injury, Drew. But the problem is just he's injury prone.
Of course. Yeah, I think now that this introduces officially the injury prone tag, and you know, people can say it's fair or foul. It makes sense why people are saying that he's injury prone. it obviously sucks and it's a bummer, but by no stretch of the imagination do they need to throw in the towel.
I don't think anybody's saying that. No.
Oh, a lot of the sentiment from the fan base is the season's over with and it's done, which I think is just an embarrassing stance to have as a fan when they started 2-0. And
should they try? Would you be open? Like, we've seen Browning play well in the past. Would you want them to try to trade for Kirk Cousins or Jameis Winston or somebody like that?
I think depending on how the next couple games go, I think Kirk Cousins is the only one I think is one that I would want to entertain as a fan. Jameis is a great dude and everything. Jake Browning is the same type. They're not getting anything better than Jake Browning with him. Kirk Cousins, I'd be willing to listen to, but I think they should just wait to see how things play out with the Vikings game and then, you know, the rest of the NFC North, who they seemingly play in the next 3 weeks.
They should feel desperate, though. They should feel desperate because this is a team that hasn't made the playoffs. If they miss it again this year, and they're 2-0, so they got a better chance to make it, but they don't have their starting quarterback, it'll be three consecutive years this team without going to the playoffs and a top five quarterback in the NFL. Now, I get part of two of those seasons would be that Joe Burrow didn't play, but like, you should be feeling some heat having paid Ja'Marr Chase, having paid T. Higgins, having only 1 year left of Trey Hendrickson. You should give yourself any chance of Joe Burrow coming back in an AFC title.
Joe Goodberry did some numbers. He's a guy that covers the Bengals and everything. Jake's career stats. Completion percentage wise, he's 4 percentage points higher than league average. Average yards per attempt, he's higher than league average. Touchdown percentage and interception percentage, both higher than league average. Passer rating is better than league average. So they have the best backup quarterback in the NFL, which is a very convenient thing to have when you have an injury-prone quarterback. It fits.
That's what he is.
Plus, he has the chemistry there where, you know, with T and Ja'Marr, where it feels like he's the best option for them moving forward. Now, if you look at history, without Joe Burrow, they average 6 points less per game, the Bengals offense does. So, obviously, it's a significant hit. Like, let's not act like Jake Browning defense, is the same quarterback as Joe Burrow. But to your point, Gold, earlier, they're going to need the defense to continue creating turnovers. That's one of the things that they've done very well over the last couple of weeks.
17 games missed to this point in his career, and now he's going to miss at least, 14?
Yeah.
At least another at 14
just,
onto
just
that.
Brutal.
So we'll keep an eye on it. I haven't looked at their playoff percentage and stuff like that. I think we'll have a better picture on that over the next 3 weeks, depending on how they look as an offense.
I don't
think
make any
like
decisions
it's way
on
too
those
early.
Until.
But it is huge that they have two in the bank, though. Like, that is a much different scenario than where they have been in September. If they were 1-1 or 0-2, it's a completely different conversation. You get two there, can you find a way to get eight more wins? Basically,
can you be .500?
Yeah.
The rest, in a lot of ways.
I don't know if 9-8
like,
gets you a wild card.
No, I meant .500 the rest of the way.
The rest of the way. Gotcha.
You got the two in the bank. Can you just
I mean, if they get to 10-7, they made the playoffs last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, can you just find a way to stabilize the rest of the way? It just depends. It's always easy to point out backup quarterback stacks when they've made 7 career starts. And you're like, oh, they're better than all those things. 7 starts is a nice thing
to
have.
Judge.
The second the rest of the NFL plans for your ass every week for an entire NFL season, the job gets harder in a
Their schedule gets a little more tricky, too, moving forward. But we'll see. I'll give Drew credit. He did not once mention this morning trying to say, hey, you know, the bet we made. You know, no, he's not trying to.
No, I'm full
the
on
bet
still
is
in. Yeah.
Injuries
the,
were
the
always
bet
part
the
of
bet.
The bet is the bet. So he did not try to skirt out of that already or anything like that.
If anything, we would probably take the out because you'd be like, well, they're 2-0 and I don't have to risk it. Sure, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'd be just as quick to take the out as Drew at this point, but the bet's the bet.
It is.
We'll stick with it, but it's just also I don't know. I kind of hate when quarterbacks like this go down in the NFL because it doesn't offer a true test of what we're. Yeah.
This is why I don't want guys getting suspended after already being ejected for a game. I want the best players playing.
No, that's different. Mm-hmm. This is. I knew that would get Cody. I was just glad to hear somebody else on my side. Dana was very much on my side.
He was. Yeah.
I like to have people in my corner occasionally.
I will say real quick while we're talking about Jalen Carter. Not that I thought the O-line played amazing, but. It wasn't as disruptive. He wasn't as disruptive as I thought he would be.
Agreed.
You know,
the offensive line, while not perfect, although on that one, there's a couple of times where it feels like they didn't protect the right way. But
and this is run game aside, and they couldn't run the football. We know that. I mean, this is an ongoing issue here.
I thought the pass blocking was okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like he wasn't a disaster. Look, I'll be honest. That unfortunately, the bar is very low right now for him and what we expect going up against Jalen Carter. Yeah, it was not like this clear disaster. I still don't know what happened with Josh Simmons. He was out for what, 4 snaps. He came out. Jalen Moore came in, and actually, he was fine playing left tackle. And I know that's a name that we're keeping an eye on based on Juwan Taylor's performance moving forward and everything, and obviously in the future. But in the locker room, Josh Simmons, like, he was like, hey, I'll let Andy kind of handle that. And then I don't think Andy was asked about it. Maybe he will today at noon. Everybody was trying to figure out in the press box, Cody, was he hurt? He came
he never
off
went to the injury
he
tent.
Always had his helmet with him, never went into the blue medical tent. At one point, the Chiefs trainer was talking to him. Rick Burkholder was talking to him, but that was it. He was staying around the whole time. Then he was back in the next drive. And he was totally fine in the locker room.
They did not discuss it on the TV broadcast. They did not. Other than he was out, Jalen Moore was in, and then eventually Simmons was back in.
Initially, you were thinking, oh, are they evaluating him for a concussion or something? But he never went in the blue medical tent. So it's really bizarre. I don't know if Andy will get asked about it. I just love just the answer. I'm more curious. Like, obviously, it's fine now, but what prompted him to miss on a key drive, you know, three or four snaps for Jalen Moore?
Although, kudos to Simmons' athleticism. Tracking down.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Holy
that was impressive.
Cow.
Was
18 miles an hour?
Yes. Stat size?
Touchdown saving tackle. I understand the Eagles ended up scoring on that drive later, but still they had to work for it. Yeah, that was really impressive for him to track down. He plays left tackle. He was on the opposite side of the field. He came all the way across.
I'll tell you right now, coaches in a meeting room are going to applaud the hell out of that effort in a meeting this week. Because, yeah, that was crazy.
Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Up next, let's talk more about Travis Kelce. It has been a rough first 2 weeks. We'll also take your calls, 913-586-7965.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.